It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. And now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you. It's Caffeinated Comics. I'm your host, John Clark. Chicago TARDIS was Thanksgiving weekend, and they asked me to moderate three panels, which was incredible and fantastic and wonderful and insightful, and it turns out exhausting. Three panels in one day was a lot of talking, even for me. But it was wonderful, and they let me record them all. So what you're going to hear are those panels. We've recorded all three, and we'll run all three. This first one was the first and probably the most fun. This was called Team TARDIS or Single Companion. And it's a discussion about did the ensembles of Doctor Who work? And you're going to hear on this panel George Harris, who's a super fan and really great guy, Robert Smith, who's an author, and Tony Lee, who is a prolific Doctor Who writer and always entertaining in panels, and it was great to actually be on one with him. So there are some volume issues just because we're in an open room and people are asking questions from the back. So I've compressed it and tried to normalize it as much for you to hear it. But if you have trouble, we usually answer the question in context so you can follow along pretty well. It's kind of like sitting in the front of the room and just hearing someone talk from the back. You know how to do that. So here's the first panel from Chicago TARDIS.
We've decided I'm moderating. So welcome to Team TARDIS or Single Companion. We will go down the panel first and introduce yourselves.
Hello, I'm Tony Lee. I'm a writer. I have strong opinions about companions, and I have popcorn, so I'm going to be kicking off quite happily today.
Yes, I'm Robert Smith. That's Smith with a question mark. I am writer and editor of fabulous things like Outside In, which is collections of essays and other things on new series and also Star Trek.
I'm John Clark. I'm host of the Caffeinated Comics podcast and a pop culture marketing writer.
I'm George Harris. I'm a fan of Doctor Who for like 30 years, 36 years, around in there.
Me too.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you don't mind me asking, George, how old are you, sir?
He's 27.
He inherited his father's years.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if you're over, say, 40, then I've got to say, well, why haven't you not been a fan for longer? Now, 36 years, that's quite specific. That's a particular point. What was it that made you suddenly go, this? I'm doing this mainly because it's your first panel.
Yeah.
I'm
sorry. Yeah, yeah. This is called panel hazing.
You can make stuff up.
Basically, I was looking for something to do to stay up late. And
how old were you, George, and why did you want to stay up late?
I was like 10 years old.
That's a good age to stay up late.
And my brother wanted to stay up late too, so we went searching for stuff to watch, and we saw a Tom Baker episode of Doctor Who. We're like, hey, this is interesting. Let's keep watching this. Channel 11, then Channel 10 in Milwaukee.
Oh my God, it's Seventh Doctor Bondi.
Yeah. In the US, before the revival, the only way you could watch Doctor Who usually was very late at night on public television.
Or the crazy old man who'd shout out lines on a corner.
But the thing was, they didn't do it in the serials. They did it once, like a 2-hour episode.
Wow.
So you're, oh, I gotta stay awake because this is so awesome.
Yeah, when I grew up in New York, it was on Channel 21, so it was way in UHF, and I saw the last 5 minutes of every Tom Baker episode and said, why isn't Monty Python on yet? So that was my introduction to Doctor Who.
They started with Kirk Wheat, and they went through Sylvester McCoy. I didn't get to see Hartnell or Troughton until much later.
Well, that's probably a great way to get into our topic is, as we go through the different eras of Doctor Who, thank you. I've been doing my podcast for 5 years.
That's a professional.
As we go through the different eras of Doctor Who, we know some doctors have maintained groups. Other doctors have had single companions, which were then replaced by other single companions. The modern Who has tended to tease us with it, bringing on a third person for a couple of episodes, and either dropping them forever or bringing them back a season later. Going down the panel, do we think Doctor Who works as an ensemble, or is it a hero sidekick show? Tony? You're on the end.
It's two different shows, straight away. If it was a classic series, works as an ensemble, in a way. I'm going to go later on why I hate ensembles. But the reason it works, though, is because the whole point of Doctor Who back in the day was crazy old man in his TARDIS, doesn't know where he's going, keeps pressing buttons and hopes he eventually gets back. So, of course, you've got these people who spend the entire day going, can we please go home? I don't like you. You're scaring me. And I end up, I either die or end up married to some alien frog prince or something. And then you've got New Who, where not only can you come back whenever you want, you've got a phone and you can just hang out and it's just like day camp. And that annoyed me. I have opinions.
Okay, I love that. I think the one foot in each world is awesome. It's a great take on Doctor Who. And yeah, it was one thing, but that was like 50 years ago. It's you know, times have changed, you know, like demands for, you know, sort of, you know, more gender equality and stuff on screen has changed. And the kind of life that you would have if you're going to go with the Doctor, you know, you have a time machine, you know. I think the draw is often like, you know, come with me because I can take you on adventures and you can be back home in time for tea, even if you've been away for 3 years. And you know, I think a lot of people wouldn't go with the Doctor in the first place if it's an open-ended thing, but if you can have one foot in each thing.
Actually, can I ask, if the Doctor turned up on your doorstep and said, travel with me, you would? Now,
it took a few people a second.
Yeah. Hands up if it was the Capaldi Doctor.
Less people, but more vigorous hands.
Travelling with the Doctor, if he turned up on your doorstep, if it was a Capaldi Doctor and said, travel with me, would you? Yes. Hands up if it was William Hartnell, I hate humans and I'm going to try and kill you sometime.
There's one. Yeah, yeah. There's one left.
Well, that's panels concluded, I think.
Basically, I'm more a fan of the solo companion. Mm-hmm. Because it takes a lot to like concentrate and like get to know this person, and then there's two more, and then one gets neglected over here, and then you end up hating the odd person out.
Barry Sullivan is Susan. So.
Yeah,
there's Adric's mine.
Yeah, every ensemble has a Tegan or an Adric or a Harry. They have someone everyone hates.
Hang on. Every group has a Tegan or an Adric. They were on the same group.
That's what made that so hard. That's what made it so hard to watch.
Your team Nyssa and the other two can die in a fire.
Yeah. I would have been fine with Nyssa and the Fifth Doctor together.
The Davison Doctor had the biggest ensemble and it just didn't work.
Peter Davison Doctor was a player. If we go back to Terminus and it's like, Nyssa, you've been wearing that same costume all this time, have a vest. Let's be honest here.
I would love Doctor Who to work as an ensemble because I also love Star Trek, and Star Trek has always been seven characters. And even on the original series, it's these three are the main and these four are the supporting characters. Or Next Generation, it's these seven are the group. But I feel like the Doctor can't share that much screen space. The Doctor is so the hero of the show, even further than a Captain Kirk. It doesn't quite work in groups. There's always somebody who falls off the wayside. There's always somebody we don't hate. And they're all kind of fulfilling the same role. They're all kind of there to go, we don't know what's happening, please, Doctor, save us.
I think the new series has got a really interesting idea. It's sort of, you know, if there's a Doctor and Amy has her own companion, who's Rory.
Right.
So it's not like the Doctor has two companions, it's more a hierarchy. So there's no like, oh, Rory and Amy have to compete for companion space. It's like they know where they fit.
Right. Amy and Rory are kind of become a team, so mm-hmm. they're basically become one character. Mm-hmm. It's almost like they're one big single companion to the Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Too soon.
Not with the big group, but with two. You had Jamie and Zoe. I think that worked well.
So you're into the power trio idea of the Doctor.
Right. Or with three, you had either Liz Shaw or the blonde woman. The name is
Joe Grant?
No.
Mike Yates?
The blonde one. I'm just joking. Sergeant Benton in a wig.
You had the female companion plus the brigadier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Joe Grant.
Joe Grant,
the one I said yes and you said no.
He just reflexively disagrees with you. I mean, that's I understand that.
He's so channeling Seventh Doctor. No, it's not.
Well, you know that about how it can be hard to juggle the focus with the companions if you have more than one. I think that is especially problematic with the new series is the show's been accused sometimes of giving too much focus to sing what the companion women's only want, as happened in the last two seasons with many people feeling that Clara Oswald usurped the show from 12th Doctor, especially in Series 8.
Right, and that's only two characters in a show.
I think, So I would say I don't think it's possible for the companion to really usurp the show. It's Doctor Who, it's the Doctor, he's a Time Lord, he knows more. It's like, give them all the space they want, you're never actually going to do it. And I think, actually, Seventh Doctor is a good example. Like, he was a Doctor Who stepped back, he was, you know, much more introverted, he liked to, you know, be in the shadows and stuff. It's still Doctor Who. It's not like, you know, suddenly it's the Ace show.
Make a difference, though. I think a lot of people would have been happier with how Series 8 balanced out if it had been better written on the part of Clara's side of the story. I mean, I got bored pretty quickly with
Clara. Okay,
here's an answer. They ate up so much time they could have used on the Doctor.
So here's an answer as a writer. Okay. In the original series, you had four 25-minute episodes, five 25-minute episodes. It was always a cliffhanger. You had a sort of thing. When you're writing a book, a film, whatever, you will always have A plot and B plot. A plot will be what is wrong with the Doctor this week, what's he doing. B plot will always be what's happening with the companion. So what will usually happen is the Doctor will end up with the bad guy, so you can have that kind of Holmes Moriarty kind of playoff. Look at me, I'm intelligent. Look at me, I'm more intelligent. Ha ha ha. Whereas the companion will always find the resistance group or the people who are being attacked or the small village, and they will get the human angle. When you then have four cliffhangers, it can't be Sarah Jane falls over and breaks her leg again. It has to be a different
thing. It
only
goes for two cliffhangers.
Yeah. She's already in a cast.
So what you'll find is having a C plot, which is always an additional thing with a separate companion, will help with something where you're constantly having to find a different cliffhanger. With New Who, bar maybe one or two episodes a season, if that, it's always a done in one. So you don't need to have that happen.
Okay, but it's not just cliffhangers, right? There's moments of jeopardy through the episode. So don't you kind of just have mini cliffhangers along the way?
Here's my opinion. Yeah. Here's my opinion.
Your opinions?
I hate companions. And the reason I hate companions... No. I love companions as well, but I hate companions for one very simple reason. We all know none of them, going back to Star Trek, is going to wear a red shirt.
Yeah.
You know, they're not going to wear a red shirt. And if they're going to die, it's going to be the most, oh my God, moment death ever, followed by a quick, sudden, ha ha, fooled you, the wizard's behind the curtain.
Well, Edric was killed.
That's my thing. Classic Who, you've suddenly got some moments of, oh my God, I didn't expect Edric to die. You know, and Adric wasn't my most favourite companion as a kid. I was, you know, that was the my group when I was growing up. That was, you know, the Adric, Tegan, Nyssa group. But it was a shock. But, you know, in a show that's 50 years on, and you can count the amount of companions that have died pretty much on one hand, and I'm not talking about, like, Rory and Amy, who faked their death because the Doctor had become a stalker. we'll discuss that later.
Yeah, I feel like we could spend a whole panel on how they were locked in 1938, but the Doctor can't go to 1942 and see them.
Okay, here's my opinion. So,
and we're going to.
They lived for another 70
several
years.
Several episodes beforehand, that they had the episode with the boxes, where the Doctor became that really creepy person who keeps turning up and won't leave, and they were getting really sick of it.
It's like Tony Lee at conventions.
Yep. So they got so sick of this, they planned this big thing that when they actually went back in time, and you got Rory goes back with his daughter, which is still super weird, and she's got her little magic watch on, and he looks at it and learns, and she's in the back of the car telling him what this does. He obviously goes, I've got a plan. And so they do the Weeping Angel thing, and he goes back in time, and then Amy goes, oh, I must go as well, bye, and goes back, and knowing that River will go back and take them back to their normal time. But they don't want the Doctor to do it, so they make sure the River goes, no, you can't go back ever. Shiny thing, look over there, bye! And the doctor just goes, yeah, bye-bye, and never goes and looks back at the house. So she goes back in time, they make some fake graves, they go back to their house, they live their life normally, doctor never turns up again.
So they pay their guy to pretend to be the grandson?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. So they ghosted the doctor, is what you're saying.
Yes.
That's how Charlize Theron broke up with Sean Penn.
I want to disagree with you about the companion death thing, right? Because I don't watch Doctor Who because I'm, you know, hoping or fearing the companion's going to die. The same way when I ride a roller coaster, I'm not, you know, expecting to die on the roller coaster. It's still fun, right? It's
still,
like,
could,
you know,
die.
I still have my moments of tension and stuff.
No, I don't want them to die.
I don't think the idea that...
I'd like to worry that they could die.
I think that's a huge reach. And I think even if you do that in Classic Who, what, this happens like 3 times over, you know, 26 years, that's not really what I'm watching the show for. I'm not thinking, like, oh my God, they're actually going to die this week. It's because I'm going to be disappointed every single week except three. But,
I'm not hoping they're going to die. I'm worried they're going to die, Robert.
But that's a completely different thing.
But I don't think it's a realistic way to approach Doctor Who.
Well, I think
if you're watching it, thinking that it's a possibility, then it's, you know, I think you're losing something by doing it.
But that's interesting because we're living in an age where the most popular shows are killing off major characters. You have Walking Dead, you have Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. People do die on that show. The actors find out that they're fired because they read that week's episode. That's what happened. Then they have to sell a house in Atlanta in this market. But Doctor Who could easily be doing that now. We live in a climate where that happens, but I think you're right. I think we're so expecting it not to happen. I mean, look at Clara. She was dead for about a week, and then she was not dead, but she had a diner TARDIS that now the doctor can't remember.
Rory died every other week.
Yeah.
Yeah, see? They get to do it.
They lived for like 2,000 years waiting for them to come and find them.
Yeah.
Which other companions were truly killed besides Andrew? And not counting Camille. Yeah.
Sarah Kingdom.
And the other one.
Katarina.
The one from Amazing Grease.
Katarina.
In Dalek's Master Plan. Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, it is a children's show. You're not deliberately going to kill them off. I'm not saying that you should kill the companions. I'm saying there should be that worry that when you're watching something, you don't know what's going to happen. And the problem is when you're watching a show where... It's like Star Trek. Again, going back to Star Trek, I used to get annoyed at Star Trek, where it would always be, oh, my God, we've got a new planet. So Spock, McCoy, me, and three guys in red shirts beam down. And you always knew there was no worry, which, again, why Wrath of Khan was amazing. Because, oh, my God, Spock suddenly went... And then they brought him back. So there's, I mean, you can bring them back, but you've got to have that moment where you watch it and you just go, wow. And I think companions had the opportunity to do it. And in the episodes, there were times when you had the wow moment. I mean, Susan deciding to stay in Dalek Invasion. That's a wow moment. She doesn't die, but she makes this decision. Tegan, when she leaves, and then when she comes back, and then when she's just completely disappointed in everything and just can't stay, and things like that, that's what you want. You don't want to have somebody that's just like, I'm going to go back to school now, mark some papers, and I'll be back on my motorbike in half an hour. It took away the tension and the jeopardy of it.
Right.
See,
I
absolutely disagree. I loved what they did with that. That essentially they implied that the Doctor and Clara are totally addicted to traveling in the TARDIS with each other, and it's not that healthy for them as well. And it kind of ruins their relationships and stuff. So even if she's having that life, it's ruining her life. And I thought that was really fascinating. So I disagree with you. I loved season 8. I thought it was.
They explained that with Amy and Rory too.
Yeah.
And the one with the cues, where every time the Doctor shows up, they just keep wrecking this normal life that they're trying to have while they're running off to the TARDIS.
It actually shows how you can't do it because they try and do it.
Yeah. Right. It's it's like trying to stay 21 forever.
Yeah.
George, what do you think?
I personally think that once the Doctor picks his companion, they should leave the planet.
Yeah. That's crazy talk.
Wait, and cancel the show? Is that
not cancel the show, but like go on adventures to other places instead of just seem like there's like an anchor there. It's like you don't go so far, then we gotta pull you right back.
Right.
It's I can't go across the street, but I can go over there.
Well, that is the interesting thing growing up watching Doctor Who as an American. It was always when Earth was in jeopardy, they had to go to the center of the Earth, which was London, which had never occurred to me before.
Yes.
The center of the world.
The monsters attack Tokyo in Japanese monsters.
That's
yes.
Well, because they're all in the Pacific. They're reptiles. They're warm-blooded.
Monsters could attack Tokyo in Doctor Who. It would just look like Cardiff.
Well, it's the same reason that Starfleet headquarters is in San Francisco.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
Now, going back to Hartnell, which we mentioned a few times, Hartnell is based on an ensemble, so you could make the argument that traditionally Doctor Who is an ensemble show.
Yes.
I mean, if you look at the Law of Averages, it's very, very rare that he has an ensemble versus a solo companion. So then, does having a solo companion make it a departure from the premise of the show?
Yeah, I think the first time they really have a solo companion is, you know, when Harry Sullivan leaves. You know, it's sort of season 13.
Right.
And so, yeah, you know, even in the unit years where he has sort of one defined companion, he's still got this ensemble kind of group.
Is there ever a crossover with Jamie? It's pretty much
it's one, like five minutes. It's episode back to back.
Yeah, this is it.
You basically don't have this.
Stephen Taylor briefly.
You know, it's very briefly.
Pretty much Sarah Jane.
It's not till Sarah Jane. It's like Planet of Evil, I think, is the first story where it's one Doctor, one companion. I mean, it works very well, and that's why they obviously took that on for later.
There are stories where Joe goes with Sir Doctor, but trip.
Yeah, that's right. But even then, you still have the comedy brigadier at the beginning and the end, or whatever, and you know, stuff like that. And there's still a sense, or even the master, right? It's, you know, you've kind of got this group of people happening. But I think the difference too is there were much longer stories then. So you know, as Tony said, as you've got a longer story, you've got more stuff happening,
and you have to have those cliffhangers. You have to have a different moment of real jeopardy. Mm-hmm.
I mean, the original Doctor was an anti-hero, right? He wasn't like you know, he wasn't Tom Baker. He was, you know, the guy you couldn't quite trust.
He wasn't necessarily the focus of the show.
That's
either.
Right.
You were focused way more on the companions and the doctor. The doctor was the wizard character. Mm-hmm.
That's right. The companions were the hero and the, you know, the thinker.
Why is stuff going on?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because this is the thing I've always wondered as well, though, is because when you watch Doctor Who, the companion is the everyman character. That's the person who is supposed to tell the reader or the viewer what's going on, because Doctor knows everything. He turns and goes, oh, this is the planet so-and-so, and these are the so-and-sos, and this is what's going on. But if you had the Doctor just doing it on his own, then he doesn't have to explain that. So you have that kind of character, which is why a lot of people... Actually, I'm going to ask a question now, which is probably going to completely just say that I'm wrong here, so you guys can do it instead of Robert for a change. Hands up who wants to... If you could, would want to be the Doctor. Hands up who'd rather be his companion and travel with him.
That's split, like 50-50. That's split.
Now, how many people want to be Robin and not Batman? Nobody! The one kid who is precisely Robin's age.
That's the thing. If you say, Hansa would like to be Sherlock Holmes, or I'd like to be Sherlock, Hansa wants to be Watson.
I kind of want to be Watson.
Yeah, Hansa wants to be the master.
Where's your beard?
But that's the thing, there is always a fixation of, you know, some people want to be the Doctor because you like the idea of the world, but more importantly, some people like to go, I'd like to just travel with the Doctor because he could show me the amazing places.
Without the responsibilities.
Yeah.
Well, here's a question then. How many people like the episodes where the Doctor is alone?
Depends on the episode.
Yeah.
Well, it always depends on the episode.
It depends on what you mean by alone, because usually, you know, you look at the year of specials, where they're like, okay, the Doctor is not travelling with a companion, but he has that companion every single
episode. Every
companion
shows up.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the only time they really do something really interesting with it, I think, is when it's Waters of Mars, where she kills herself and stuff. That you wouldn't see with a regular companion.
Right.
Otherwise, they could have just had a companion running
through. But there are solo episodes like Midnight with the Tenth Doctor, or the episode last year, and I'm blanking on the title, where the Doctor's trapped in the castle.
Heaven Sent
is one of my favourites.
It's the best episode of the season, if not Capaldi's best. Mm-hmm. And he's completely alone in that.
Yeah.
It's him and a monster. Mm-hmm.
That's his companion.
To use the Batman analogy again, we're at a point with Batman where he's alone most of the time, and when he needs that other character to talk to, they'll put Robin in it. But Robin's not in every issue, nor he wasn't even in the last three movies.
Yeah.
Does the Doctor need companions at all at this point?
Yes.
Yeah, but why?
So when you look at it, the story's not really about the Doctor. While us viewing the Doctor's world, the Doctor himself, he has all the stuff that he has done that we never see. Everywhere he goes, oh, I've been here before, I've seen that before, let's go over here. The story truly isn't about the Doctor. It's about the companions and about our view into the world as the companions and how we can, you know, how we can relate to the companions, or we can't really or shouldn't really be able to relate to the Doctor. Going back to the first Doctor, the first Doctor was very alien. The companions really didn't like or trust him because it wasn't about the Doctor. The whole show has never been about the Doctor.
And he tried to kill them.
The only window that we get is through the companions.
There's a lady with had her hand up for a while.
I think the Doctor needs a companion, but for a completely different reason. I think it's structural. It's like when you have a mystery, the detective needs someone to talk to, otherwise he's doing a monologue.
Poirot needs his Hastings.
So Sherlock Holmes needs Watson, Narrow Wolf needs Archie Goodwin. most mysteries, there are two people. And the second person doesn't have to be a complete idiot, but just somebody that the detective has to talk to. Mm-hmm. So you don't have the detective monologuing constantly. I don't see the doctor's companion as being second class or something, because you have to have someone there who gets in trouble, who asks the questions. I mean, it's just very, very structured.
Or as Donna says, someone to stop you, which is interesting too, right?
Yeah, that's a very important thing, though, because one of the things I used to get annoyed with was I hated the companions who were just pointless and ran around and screamed and fell over and did their ankle in.
No.
Which became, yeah. I wasn't going to say anything. But at the same time, see, I'm my favourite era of Doctor Who is the Pertwee Unit years. Because I like the Brigadier, I like the fact, but I also like the fact that Jo Grant, she was the ditzy blonde, but at the same time, she was an agent, and there were times where she'd do something and he'd look at her and she'd be like, I'm an agent. And it's almost like Terrence Dix had to keep prodding to remind you that she wasn't just an idiot person. I like it when you've got a competent person who can do the things they want to do. So when Harry Sullivan was in it, I loved Harry Sullivan because although he was a bit, basic, he could still go out and punch out a Dalek.
Right.
Because he was, I'm a subway.
That's going to hurt your hand.
Wouldn't take that far.
I would get annoyed when you had the Mel situation where they just wanted comedy sidekick. And I'm a bit concerned about having Nardole in the new series because I'm worried they're going to make him the comedy sidekick.
I think comedy sidekick works when it's more than one. If it's only a comedy sidekick, yeah, you're right. But I think if you have a main companion and then there's one who's just there for the jokes or whatever.
Right, Strax works well because Thrasher and Jenny are always there.
That's right.
But you also know that if Strax is in a fight, Strax can turn around and sort it out.
Right. And that's a very interesting point is that it seems like, Tony, what you're getting to is what makes a companion valuable is that they have skills the Doctor doesn't have. But we're at this point where the Doctor pretty much can do anything.
Oh, yeah.
He could fight. He already knew everything. He was already smart. He was already cunning. He was already more clever. He already had any tool to get him out of the jam. So as long as he can fight, and
I think they bring compassion, which I think is often the key one. The Doctor is,
and that's a big thing with Capaldi, is removing a lot of that compassion.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, I quite liked it when Romana was in it for the simple fact that he would say something and Romana would go, nope,
no,
don't do that. Do this.
She's his equal totally because she's a time lady.
Yeah, and in fact, I'd actually say she's probably even better because when she changes and she comes back, and I've done my regeneration. Because I can do this myself. I don't keep dying and doing it.
Yeah. Yeah,
we have a question back here for a while.
Does the Doctor really need anything? I think the point of Waters of Mars was to show that the Doctor needs companions to keep him grounded. Because he didn't have the people on the space station weren't really his companions, and he kind of went power hungry.
Yeah, I agree with that. Any thoughts on that?
Excuse me?
No.
Sorry.
Yeah. Go ahead.
All right. Well, then, let's play devil's advocate here, though.
Don't fight with each other.
Well, the issue of the Doctor having companions has become problematic in the new series, in that he always seems to be worse off when they leave him. And usually it's under very sad circumstances. If anything, maybe it's better if he learns to live on his own and not have to be, because he risks too many emotional connections. He gets screwed.
I agree with you,
the ending of Series 9.
Like, I haven't died. Oh, well, let's carry on.
I mean, in Series 9, doesn't the storyline eventually show us why the Doctor shouldn't have a companion? Because if he makes an emotional connection to somebody, and especially if no one else seems to want to make one with him, then he'll become too dependent on them.
But that's all of us, right? You could equally argue that we shouldn't have friends, we shouldn't have lovers and things like that, because
But at the same he gets screwed over in Hellbent when you think about it. Because he's the one who suffers throughout that whole string of episodes. And he doesn't get rewarded for pulling through and doing everything he can to save Clara. I think the ending of that story might have been a lot stronger had they simply returned Clara to her death at the end. And then the Doctor could have come to terms with his people, who, because frankly they do owe him forgiveness and apology for what they put him through. It was their fault the relationship became toxic at the end.
I mean, many people owe me forgiveness and apology, but I'm not going to get into this.
Especially from your government. That hand has been waving for quite some time.
It is someone's fault, but I don't think it's the general's not Missy. She's the one who put them together trying to create the hybrid. And I wonder if, maybe Michelle Lewis could tell us if she wasn't under a spoiler or anything.
Yeah. She's next door. Let's hunt her.
Just text her.
If we're going to come back to this, in that I think what she's trying to do, Missy, is she wants to be in there at the same level that Dr. Holden's companions.
Right.
She wants that point in his life, not and doesn't want the companions in there. She's given her, she gave him Clara and made her the most important one he's ever had in his life, because all the splinter Clara could save him and all
but
the possible
at the same, well, that shows just how clumsy the writing of that particular arc is when you think about it. Shouldn't it
I'm just saying it's not done.
That's a whole different panel.
If the doctor
isn't it eventually every panel?
Say it. Didn't the Doctor and Clara being together only do good for the universe in the end?
It did. And that's
nothing said the hybrid was going to destroy the universe, after all. Maybe it would have been better had they stayed together.
Yes, but then you've got real world issues. And I'm gonna speak up for the writers here.
Okay.
Is the fact is, and it's public knowledge, that when they were creating this most recent series with Clara, they thought she'd left. Because right. Jenna Coleman was leaving the show, she was going to do something else, and then there was contract negotiations, and she stayed.
Yes.
And by the time, I believe, this is what I've been told by other people, by the time she actually came back on board, the first four or five episodes had already been written, and had to be rewritten to bring her back into it. So if you've got a situation where, when you're writing the entire series, the character that you've got isn't there, and then suddenly is there, it's going to throw problems left, right, and centre. You are going to find there's gaping holes left, right, and centre.
Especially when you have a show that has only two characters.
Yeah. And so I think a lot of that was pretty much due to circumstances rather than writing. And I will stand up for Stephen on that respect. Also, Stephen would have turned around, and in all things, Stephen would have gone, this is the arc. But then he gives them to different people. And we don't know how much Stephen would have tinkered or tampered with those scripts, but he is relying on the writers to give the best story that they can each time. And you will always have a hit and miss with writers. Some writers are amazing, some writers you go, oh, really? And then the next one they do is incredible, or the next one they do is worse. Because writers are writers, we're fallible. So, for that respect, I'm not going to turn and say, oh, this shouldn't have been done this way. The season was the best it could have been, as is all seasons. They're always the best they could be. People rip apart Russell T. Davis. You know, but then when you read the writer's tale, you realise that he was working 24 hours a day to try and get it done in time. So you kind of have to go, okay, I can understand a little bit of why this has happened. So I will say that in respect, that you know, we don't know the full story of why it happened. Only when everything's fine and everyone's lovely do you get a great season. And most of the times since the Ninth Doctor, there's always been something going on in that season.
Yeah, I mean, I think actually to agree with you about the real-world issues too, I mean, a companion's going to leave at some point, and invariably earlier than the Doctor. You know, you don't usually get companions outlasting Doctors and stuff, so you've got to have this turnover. And so I think it keeps it fresh, but, you know, these relationships come to an end, but the joy of Doctor Who is it keeps going, and so you've got new relationships, and then he makes new friends and so on.
And I think that's one of the interesting things, Robert, you brought up, that the companion usually leaves before the Doctor, but we do have companions, Clara, one of them, mm-hmm. who overlaps two Doctors, Perry yeah. being another one.
In fairness,
and that relationship
classic
changes.
Doctor, it was pretty much all of them.
Yeah.
Because you needed that continuation.
Just a little bit, though. Usually.
Oh, yeah, they're staying
yeah,
in
yeah.
there.
Yeah. It's a couple of episodes.
Yeah.
And then,
yeah.
Except for Sarah Jane Smith has a whole season. But
yeah.
yeah.
So there's always that, if the show becomes the relationship between the Doctor and the companion, it's always fascinating to see how different it is when you bring another actor into that mm-hmm. role. And mm-hmm. I think that's something Doctor Who does that no other show can do.
Exactly.
Because no other show can keep recasting a major role mm-hmm. and have the fans stay with it.
Mm-hmm.
So that is one of the strengths of having that companion.
Yeah, I would say that the greatest strength of Doctor Who is regeneration.
Yeah.
Not just on screen, but behind the scenes as well. You're
right.
constantly changing it over and starting again. And I think this is the joy of Doctor Who. You get to have, you know, the solo companion times, you have the ensemble, you have the whatever, and you keep mixing it up. Because if it was always the same thing all the time, then it gets dull.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you want to try different things.
And I think that's the advantage of things like Turn Left, where you have a complete companion episode and the Doctor's barely in it, because you can see how well those companions have been brought up.
Mm-hmm.
Things like Father's Day, for example, with
yeah.
Rose. you know, you couldn't have done that if you didn't care about Rose. Mm-hmm. And Turn Left, I mean, well, let's be honest. Yeah. I mean, Turn Left is very much the Donna story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And again, Donna's one of my favourite companions for the simple fact that she actively hunts down the Doctor. And she actively finds him. I mean, the people who sort of... it used to be a case of, oh, no, something's gone wrong. I'm going to go into this phone box. And, oh, look. Yeah. And everyone said, why have you gone in the phone box? The phone box is actually outside. You make the phone call from the phone. You go inside if you're a criminal and you're locked in. Why have you gone in there? You're just some kind of weird person. Who's kind of box. You deserve all you get, and that's all I'm concerned.
Well, one of the things I like about Donna is that most of the companions are so in awe of the Doctor. And,
yeah.
And Donna knows she is not the intellectual equal of the Doctor, but she's the emotional equal of the Doctor. Mm. She won't let him get away with anything emotionally about
yeah. mm-hmm.
And she'll stand up to him toe-to-toe, even though she does not know what planet they're going to, she does not know what time they're going to.
Where he's
going to
leave her.
Yeah. Yeah, so that there was a dynamic that I think hasn't been replicated.
Donna ruined the Doctor's life.
Why?
I disagree.
Yeah,
I completely disagree with you on
that. You're all alone here.
This is great. You should not say me.
You have crossed the stream. How things change. How things change.
Okay,
over
so
time.
Explain it, please.
While Donna convinced the Doctor to save Caecilius and Pompeii, and later the 12th Doctor gained his face, had the 12th Doctor not had that reminder to save people, he wouldn't have saved Ashildur's life, and Ashildur would not have lived to backstab him and inadvertently paved the path for Clara's death.
The 4th Doctor saved Delphos before the Daleks were created,
right.
And therefore did a whole lot more damage.
Right, that too.
You can find these books that series.
That's true too, it's granted.
And again, going back to the entire writing thing, the entire reason that entire took
so
place was because
really,
they hired the same
man. That's the case of the companion encouraging the Doctor to help others, but then he's not repaid in kind for his good deeds.
But that's one of the premises of Doctor Who, right?
It's like, mm-hmm. You know, I mean, even like the next Doctor, whatever, it's like, you know, he's never thanked. He just does it. And that's he does it out of the goodness of his heart, not because he's getting some thanks.
We don't know about the Doctor and Handel's years.
Yeah.
I mean, there could be a lot of thanks to Handel.
I felt hell-bent was unsatisfied because when the Doctor asks, after all I've done, aren't I owed this? Well, yes, he is owed. And he can do it.
I don't think so. I think if you're doing it because you feel you're owed, that's not really very, you know,
that's
great.
Not a hero. Yeah.
It's not a hero, exactly.
Yeah, a hero is about sacrifice. Yeah.
Does it
becomes a mercenary.
He disappears before anybody can say, here's a box, box of gold.
Oh, he's gone. No.
But then you can't be happy if you're never repaid.
Yeah.
And if you're always lonely.
Who says the Doctor has to be happy?
Who says he's lonely?
You didn't seem happy at the end of Hell
Bend. That's because Peter Capaldi's a very good actor.
Yeah.
there's another mother doctor who's so good at that point.
Why didn't they just introduce a new companion at the end of that story?
Which new companion?
To show that life goes on.
Which new companion?
Well, it would be any companion.
Which new companion?
Why not use that word?
Yeah. But, you know, if I break up with someone and I'm sad for a while, it doesn't mean my life is ruined. It just means I'm sad for a while and I'm going to meet someone new and then, you know, start a new life. Like, you don't have to be like, oh, I better find a new one straight away or else.
Why doesn't he just go back to Gallifrey in the end and work things out with his people?
Mm-hmm. Oh, they're never going to work that out.
I think he knows.
They don't like him.
I'm going to stop you on that point because that's basically listening down to anybody who's had a problem with their parents and has left home and you go, oh, why don't you just go sort it out with your mum and dad?
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't happen.
Home.
It wasn't Voyager.
He spent the first few years not wanting to go anywhere near it.
Yeah,
he doesn't want to go home.
Yeah,
the only reason he's worried about going home is because he thinks he's lost everything. And once he realises they're all back, he's kind of like,
okay,
oh,
I'm good
now. They're great. Oh, they're still dicks.
And I think this being the day after Thanksgiving, a lot of people in this room have just had that experience.
It's like, oh, I really miss you. Okay, I'm good.
there's someone who's had their hand.
So I think one of the things that... one of the things that you were talking about is just the idea that the Doctor, like, should be going back to Gallifrey, spending time with the Time Lords, that type of thing, his people. But I think one of the things that's so important about looking at where he is now in his narrative is that he spent so much time with humanity in the new series. Like, the closest thing to, like, a person that isn't human that he's that's been his companion is like River Song and Jack Harkness, that like they haven't been longtime companions that we've seen in the show, that type of thing. So like where he is at right now is he spent so much time with humanity. He has he is different than how he was, for example, in the classic series, or where he was even at the beginning of the new series. So I don't think that he can really engage so much in his own culture right now
and
in his narrative.
And let's be honest, let's look back at the episodes with his own culture. Deadly Assassin didn't go well. Five Doctors didn't go well. Yeah. Trial of a Time Lord didn't go well.
War Games at the end.
Yeah, he left for a reason. And
It goes back to the question of being owed. I mean, they owe him pretty bad, especially after the whole confession about business. And, you know, why don't more people do good in the world? Maybe it's because we don't appreciate them enough.
But I think the Time Lords know what he needs and they'll give you what he wants. If you look back to John Pertwee, you know, basically he's exiled to Earth, he can't do anything, and then one day they allow him to travel again. And that's the greatest thing in the world for him. He doesn't want to go back to Gallifrey, he wants to travel. Mm-hmm. And they give him that because they realise he needs him.
So what do they give him in Hellbent?
We don't know yet. Maybe we find out next season. That's the thing, is until an entire season, or an entire Doctor has been done, until the showrunner leaves, you don't know what the final payoff is going to be. Because if you look back at, say, when Russell left, Russell did an entire 20-minute end bit that kind of did all the payoffs for everybody.
Right.
And that's when you saw the payoffs.
Right.
You know, and some of them were good, some of them were a bit, really? But, you know, that was, you get the payoff. So we don't know yet what the payoff is. I mean, Nardole is back in the new season, but we don't know how there's going to be a payoff there. We can't, unless you've got every script, you can't know. So your answer could be, there is something, we just haven't seen it yet. Or, you know, we don't know. It could be either.
Yeah. And sometimes there isn't one. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, you have a question?
No, I was going to say, like the whole reason the Doctor does good stuff is because he's a good person. He's always going to do the right thing to save someone. He doesn't expect to be owed, but it would be good if he did get something in return. Plus, I don't think we would watch the show about a guy who's always expecting to get something out of doing good stuff.
Because he's a mercenary.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think if he was someone that wanted to get credit for all the things he did, he wouldn't be changing his face.
Right.
Yeah, and there's an entire subplot with Matt Smith where he's trying to make sure that no one remembers who he is. Because it's got to the point where everybody is like, oh, yeah. It's you, hey! And he doesn't want that.
Yeah. And one of the things I like about the Moffat era is that he deliberately leaves these big holes in the timeline. It's like... especially with Matt Smith, like between...
It's like 200 years past.
Yeah, 200 years past. So we don't know that he's been... We don't know what he's been doing in between those two things. And that's a place where, you know, an expanded universe can fill in. But it also doesn't mean he's just been sitting in the TARDIS for 200 years feeling alone.
It's a really good book.
Yeah. There could be companions have come and gone in that time.
Yeah, and this is the thing. The expanded universe plays that. I mean, the comics have countless more companions. I mean, we created for the 10th Doctor. We created... we gave him Matthew Finnegan and Emily Winters. Partly because we wanted companions that we knew that people who... If you're watching Martha and the Doctor, you know Martha's going to live, especially if the comic comes out after Martha's left the show. But if you've got, again, two comic companions, you don't know what's going to happen. Titan did the same. Doctor Who Magazine had a companion. I mean, God, when we did the 11th Doctor, we gave him the 20-foot-high cybernetic dinosaur companion. Because you know, it's expanded stories. That's worked. Look at Charlie Pollard. You know, she was such a popular expanded universe, she became canon, you know, when the Eighth Doctor mentions her.
So actually, Tony, can I ask, back to the original topic of this panel, let me tie this in a bow. So if you're doing for different media, like comics and stuff, like how do you, like do you think the ensemble works better there?
Again, it was tough when we wanted, and this again, this is going back to the thing that we argued about earlier on, is when we actually pitched Emily and Matthew, it was, we went to Russell and said, look, we want to basically have companions we can kill. And we're not going to kill them, and we didn't kill them. But we wanted to be able to turn around and have something dramatic happen where they didn't know what was going to happen. Because when we did The Forgotten, it was Martha and the Doctor. And when we wrote it, Sci-Fi Channel had Doctor Who over here. It was a year behind. So in England, we had Donna, you know. But in the US, Martha was still the main companion. Halfway through the run of The Forgotten, BBC America took over, pretty much put the entire year out in a weekend, and suddenly you were back up to speed, and we realised that all the things we had happening in the Forgotten no longer mattered, because not only was Donna now the companion, she was pretty much leaving as the final episode came out. So then we had to change it, and there was a lot of jiggling around to make it fit that it worked. And when we did the ongoing, we said, we can't have that again. So we had to give something different. We could have had Billy. We could have had other people involved. But we just went, no, we're going to have completely new characters. We picked two characters because I wanted one character to be the complete, oh, my God, the Doctor's amazing. You know, I'm a... She was an actress in 1916 Hollywood. She was sick of being underappreciated. She's suddenly with this world where she can do anything she wants. And then the other guy was effectively the guy who used to fancy her and is convinced the Doctor's up to no good. And so for the entire season, this kid's looking for every opportunity to prove that he's right and his Doctor's a bit crazy. And, the bad guy plays on that. So it worked as an ensemble because it was Turlough. You had the Turlough character who was actively working against the Doctor. You had the other character who was actively on his side. But when we did the Amy and Rory ones, you started having issues because you go, okay, well, they're both going to do the same things. Amy's always going to end up with these people. What's Rory going to do? And we did a Doctor Who Star Trek script, and Scott and David Tipton, I think Rory just disappears for like four episodes. He just literally goes into TARDIS and disappears. And I got annoyed because Rory's a nurse.
He's in the holodeck the whole time?
Pretty much. Yeah. Rory's a nurse, you know, and only once, I think, in the season do you actually see Rory doing his nurse things. They make more of the fact that he was an auton than they do the fact that he was actually a nurse who, if somebody hurt, could go over and save their life. You know, apart from the strippogram who saves the universe.
Well, Tony, then, as someone who's created companions from whole cloth, what do you think makes a good companion, and what is the scenario where you need more than one person to fulfill that role?
There's no correct answer to it, unfortunately, because each story, each Doctor has a different thing. I mean, for me, Robert had it earlier on. The companion humanises the Doctor. They've got to be the person who turns to the Doctor and says, well, are you sure you want to do that? Because, you know, Doctor, oh, no, fixed point in time. They're the person who says, well, why don't you try and change that? And I think that's a very important thing for the companion to be, is the person who is, you know, you need the conscience on his shoulder, because he doesn't have one. Because he's been around for so long, he kind of forgets it. He has a conscience, but he gets distracted by something over there. He really is an ADHD kid. He's like, you know, something shiny happens over there, Doctor's forgotten, he's left a companion in a lava pit. You know. But then you look at some of the other Doctors. I mean, Peter Davison's character pretty much almost always had an ensemble cast. And I love the big finishes where it's just him and Nyssa, because it completely changes the dynamic. You look at 10th Doctor. 10th Doctor didn't really have an ensemble until you're looking at the final episode where he has the entire group of everybody ever using the TARDIS console as it's apparently supposed to be used. And you realise that he was completely lost in that episode.
Yeah.
So he needed one.
Even with two of him. Yeah,
even yeah. with two of him. He's all lost. So it depends on the actor playing the part. Capaldi works very much with one companion. We will learn how he is with two. He could be terrible. We won't know.
Well, they've done a couple of episodes where they brought in kids on the TARDIS and one episode.
No, they didn't.
we have erased those.
Oh, you mean have to talk fan to movies? That were.
You're going to have to talk to Neil Gaiman about that.
Now let's get back to that. They've been so stingy with details about Series 10. What do you think Bill's role is going to be, especially now that we know we have Nardole as well?
I can't answer that one.
Which was kind of one of those late in the game decisions.
We've seen a 2-minute trailer.
I actually can't answer this one.
Very, very little.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll be this. Fundamentally, you know, from 30,000 feet, it's the same role it always is, right? You have to have someone who the Doctor can explain stuff to, who can kind of be the compassionate person, who, as Tony said, you know, can go to the village while he's dealing with the villain.
Do you think
villain,
she'll be like, you know, a little bit sort of spunky with a bit of sass, like most
really?
Companions?
What a great idea! I like where you're going with that. Yeah, yeah. And you know, and I think she'll be a, you know, also a person that, you know, the remember, most people watching Doctor Who are not actual fans as we define them. They're people who just watch Doctor Who, right? And so the reason it's been so successful, I think, is actually the companion model. I think companion model is really, like, the new Who companion thing is probably the key to success, because, you know, your mum can watch it and go, yeah, okay, sure. You know, whereas previously, Mom goes, science fiction, I don't want to know. You know, and so I think Russell T Davies in particular was brilliant at that. He really gave an opening for a much larger audience to come into Doctor Who. And the rest of us love all the other
stuff. You actually cared about a single mum on a council estate.
Exactly. No. Yes, that's right.
He wasn't even in the top.
Absolute genius, actually. Yeah. You know, and I think that model will never change because that is absolutely the key to success. And so, yeah, it does seem a bit samey. And, you know, as you say, you can kind of guess what it's going to be a bit, but that's because it works. It's a winning formula. And then there'll be tweaks on the details. Mm-hmm.
Yes. George, what do you think?
Oh, sorry, George.
Well, I think a good companion is somebody that, besides the, oh, look, Doctor, you're so brilliant, they at least can navigate his world like he would, except for they don't have the advanced knowledge that he does. And I think that they should also make sure that he doesn't become the Master or any other evil Time Lords or evil, like Davros and all those, because the Doctor could easily go off that direction and just say, oh, I solved the problem and made the problem worse.
Yeah.
And then the companion would be like, no, you didn't solve the problem. You just created another problem. Why don't you try this? And then he can go and say, okay, I'll change it to mine. and they're like a sounding board more, rather than the one that they just forget about for like five episodes, and then they pop up one day, you're like, wait a minute, they're still here?
Yeah, and I think that's an interesting point about the companions humanizing the Doctors, because going back to my idea that London is the center of the universe, his companion is invariably someone from our time. And I think that's because it's our way in. He goes through all in time and space. He doesn't really need to be anchored to 2016 London. But it's the fact that it's someone that we relate to completely that gives us our way in.
I think that's actually more production design than actually story design. I think that was pretty much when BBC looked at it. They said, we don't want him to be walking around with, like, you know, William Shakespeare. We want somebody who can be taken as somebody from our time.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I think, again, why Russell went, I'm going to have this person. I'm going to stop. There's the chap who's had his hand up for ages there.
You started getting in the church, right? I was thinking about it. So you emphasized the role of the companion's conscience or the psychological effect they have on the Doctor. Does it matter if the companion is smart?
Good question.
I prefer if the companion was smart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd actually rather the companion was smart. But at the same time, they can still be compassionate.
Yeah. I mean, they can be smart in a different way, right? Mel was a computer programmer, right?
Yeah. Health guru.
Exactly.
Remember the carrot sticks.
Yeah. I mean, I think absolutely it's good to have a smart companion. You need a slightly smarter level of writing then, too, because, you know, if you've got two smart people, they're not explaining the 101 stuff to each other because they already know that stuff. So.
Right. It also helps your B story if you have someone capable handling things where the Doctor isn't.
Yeah, well, things like, you know, where Sarah Jane just, you know, picks up a rifle and, you know, it is like, I got this. And you're like, when has she ever shown that she was like some, you know, but it doesn't matter.
Sarah Jane is like the perfect improv student.
Exactly.
Just whatever situation, she's like, I can do this.
Yeah.
Here's something that we haven't touched on, though, and it's something that I've always found very fascinating as well, though. Is, I think it was Davos who does the line where he says, like, you know, Doctor doesn't use guns, his companions are, he just uses these companions as weapons. What do you think of that?
It's an interesting theory, but it doesn't actually really get borne out that much in the series. It was a great setup for that episode particularly. But mostly the companions do, with some exceptions, they mostly follow the Doctor's mold of they're not really picking up guns and shooting things.
Do you think he would sacrifice them for the greater good quite easily? Or do you think he would?
I don't think easily. It's there. I mean, I think that's more the tension that's sort of hovering. I mean, I think as George said, it's like, you know, the Doctor has the potential to become Davros, right? It's sort of always there a bit, and so the companion's what keeps him from doing that, I think. And that's the great little sort of shimmer in the show that's kind of like, yeah, this Doctor guy, he's great, but he might not be. So we need an anchor.
Yeah. Well, the Doctor's weapon is intelligence, so which is why it helps to have a smart companion. Because then they are his weapons, because they are people that can be where he's not. They can do what he needs to do in two different places, or they can come up with strategies and ideas that he didn't.
But do you think he changes the companions because of that? For example, Martha Jones, medical student, turned into a woman about to destroy the world in nuclear fire.
Mm-hmm.
We've all been there.
Yeah. Okay, we call that Wednesday.
We've all had relationships where we no longer recognize the person that we took on a first date.
Yeah, I do think he does change the companion, just like the companion changes him. Because Yeah, a lot of times where they're that just meek, innocent person, then by the end of their run with the doctor, they're charging into fire just like the doctor.
They're Mad Max.
Step aside, doctor. I got this.
Yeah, I mean, I think with Donna, you see where it didn't. And the reset of Donna shows you just how far she'd come before that.
Yeah.
So that shows the effect of the doctor on the computer.
And that's their character arc. As we said, the doctor doesn't really grow. He's the icon. He's static, and he's lived for thousands of years. So his emotional arc is going to take more time. Mm. It's the companion who's there for usually a year, 2 years. There we see them go. And honestly, they're in situations where if they don't adapt to it now, it's a horror movie and they're just a victim.
Yeah.
Well, part of it is the issue of choice, which was brought up in Series 8. A weapon doesn't...
He really hated Season 8.
But what I'm trying to say is a weapon can't choose whether it will be used or not.
Yeah.
Ultimately, part of the point of Series 8 was the doctor realizing that he wasn't an officer, though others felt he was, like Danny Pink, but he lets his companions make the choice to help him, or to help themselves, or go into the fray. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, although as the 11th Doctor says, if you give a kid a suitcase full of candy, what are they going to do? You know, it's So yes, you have the choice, but you also have a lot of influence.
I know we're coming near the end. I've got a question that I'd like to put to you, and also to the audience as well. Think of a companion, obviously for a Doctor. I'd like to know who you think would work as a companion for a different Doctor to the ones they usually would be with.
Oh, I totally know. Tegan and the Sixth Doctor.
Why?
It would be wild TV. They'd be shouting at each other and screaming. It'd be hilarious. Yes, I think that'd be awesome. Because they're two very fiery people, right? Whereas I think the Sixth Doctor, the problem is the Sixth Doctor looks really bad because he's always picking on Perry, who isn't really his equal there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And if you had the Sixth Doctor with an equal, like the two of them would actually balance really nicely.
I'd really like to see Jamie and the Twelfth Doctor.
Yeah.
Because I think of that, because I think they'd just be just arguing each other, and you'd obviously have to have subtitles.
I'd like to see Donna with the Fourth Doctor.
Because
the Fourth Doctor just spins around at every one of his companions, and Donna would just cut it right through.
Yeah. George?
I like to see Rose with the Fifth Doctor.
They would totally do.
She attached herself to the Tenth Doctor.
Blonde on blonde?
Oh, I'm so in love type of thing. How would the Fifth Doctor handle it?
He was a pretty blonde boy.
Exactly.
Blonde on blonde.
And she's going to be like, oh, Doctor, I love you. And he's like, great, enter my harem. This is Tegan.
This is Adric.
This is Turlo. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Well, we're out of time, so always leave on a big joke.
don't let him have that image as the final thing.
No, that's the image.
Good image.
They go out in the world with
coming
this.
On the side.
Nope.
Chameleons.
What we got. Yeah. That was your closer. That's what they got. Let's just go down quickly. And how can we find you in the world and online?
Pretty much anything that says Mr. Tony Lee. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram is at Mr. Tony Lee. Or find me signing at 4 o'clock in the autograph room. Are you with me at that point?
I might be. Yeah. Okay. I'm signing later today. Yes. Yeah. You can find me through my books. That's probably the easiest way. Yes.
Right. My podcast, Caffeinated Comics, which this will be one, so congratulations, is on every week on iTunes and Stitcher, and you can find me on Twitter at Not In My Book.
I'm not on social media, but I'll be hanging out throughout the day.
You can find him in the bar.
Those few people that's not on social media. Yeah.
Well, and thank you guys all for coming, and thanks for being
great. We've been John and George and Paul and Ringer.
Yeah.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
That's